is the Planning Commission work session for Thursday, August 2nd, 2018.
Okay. So this is CPZ 2018-00002 Board. This applicant owns two adjacent parcels at the intersection of Northeast 162nd Avenue and Northeast Ward. The applicant is requesting to amend the comp plan and zoning designation from commercial with community commercial zoning to urban high density residential R30. The history of this site is that this was zoned urban low residential R16 until 2002. The county amended the zoning designation from R16 to commercial to create an 11-acre development site. And the then owner had a commercial development site plan that was to be built in two phases, but only the northernmost portion up here, 2.74 acres, was built, as shown, and the other two parcels are vacant, and they were later sold. The applicant's narrative states that despite a decade of marketing efforts, the past and current owners have been unable to attract prospective tenants or buyers due to access restrictions. And the abundance of commercial retail space in the area and the emergence of e-commerce. Less than a mile to the south, this is the property here, less than a mile to the south is a fourth lane, so it's a Safeway with a major retail strip mall, and then all the commercial along fourth lane. The 4 square mile area in the vicinity of this parcel is predominantly zoned low to medium density residential. There is no high density residential. High density residential allows duplex and multifamily dwellings. And staff finds that the request meets the applicable criteria and is recommending approval. Any questions?
Who's the owner right now?
It's Ward and Grammar. Oh, Capital. Ward and PC Capital.
Can you go back to the previous? What's the big parcel to the right of it? What's that?
This is vacant.
Just vacant?
Yeah.
What's it zoned down?
It's
Urban low, I
think. Urban low.
R16.
R16?
Yes.
And they want to move it to R30?
They want these two, this parcel here and this parcel here to be R30. So it'd be urban high in this predominantly urban low, urban medium.
What sort of traffic work has been done on this? What sort of traffic studies have been done on this to see
Is Larry here? There's a traffic impact analysis in your packet.
That must have been the one I didn't read.
Yeah. Okay. It's behind tab 2.
Right past the map.
Past the maps. So the changing it to commercial would decrease the trips by 2,300 per day. A decrease of 2,300 trips per day.
By
from what to what? From commercial to residential.
Would decrease the number of trips
by 2,300 per day.
I find that extremely hard to believe. What kind of commercial would it have been? Not very lucrative.
Going out of business. Commercial.
Put your pointer on Ward Road and 88th.
Ward Road and 88th?
Yeah, that would be further north, right about there. Now, come down about 45 degrees. Yeah, there's a development currently going in right there that has caused that intersection to fail.
This intersection?
Yeah. There were one of three that got by on the mistake in the county code for mitigation of intersections. So 88th and Ward Road is currently going to be failing as soon as those houses are completed in 12 months.
Now that Lori's here, would you perhaps repeat that, Richard?
Excuse me?
Now that Lori's here, could you reiterate what
sure,
you just
sure.
said?
The pointer, if you put it where Walgreens, that shopping center is, right about there somewhere, it'd be on 162nd and Ward Road. And then if you move further north to 88th and Ward Road, if you come back about an inch right in that area, there is currently fully developed a subdivision, which everything is in. They're starting to basically pour foundations that it will cause that intersection of 88th and Ward Road to fail. They were able to get approval when the county code was written in such a way that they did not have to mitigate the intersection. So they got a freebie.
But then the county revised the code after that?
They did, but they got approved.
Right. But yeah. That has to do with current development. This is
Yeah, but you're going to have an intersection that doesn't need to be impacted anymore at this particular point. So somebody comes up with the dollars to improve the intersection, which is going to be a zoo in the morning and in the evening.
Yeah, but I mean, that's going to be addressed during the development review process. And actually, this will be less of an impact because it's going from commercial to residential, which has lower strip generation and commercial development. And they'll be heading south.
When you looked at the R30, how did you feel that was compatible with the rest of the neighborhood, which appears to be almost entirely single family in all directions?
There is medium density. R22, R18, R12.
Would you mind pointing those out?
Here's an R18, here's an R12, two R12s.
Well, that's a mile away though.
R22, R18. It's mixed
use? Yes, to the south. You say the residential.
Oh, down here.
You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but it appears that everything that's contiguous with that parcel is single family. Although it's smaller lot size, it's still single family. Well, I guess it makes sense to put the multifamily on the arterial corridor, but nevertheless, it seems a bit out of place.
I think they probably wanted to go to a third because the parcel is so small they can't get the density they need. Make it worth developing. They need the higher density to warrant the development. If you don't get that density, it's never going to get developed.
Can you come back to the parcel, please? So we're discussing only the portion that's in red.
And white here.
And white.
It's these two.
It's
just the wrong legend, but the white generated that room. It's these two.
It's just the red portion, though, correct?
No.
It's the red and white. It's these two parcels here.
And that right on the corner, that's where that Walgreens is, isn't it?
Correct. This is white here. This is Walgreens.
That's where the Walgreens is.
So we're going to surround the Walgreens with R30 density and put them on the intersection of 162nd and Ward Road.
Walgreens going to like that.
Possibly.
The business.
So I'll read up on it. I'm a little bit skeptical about the traffic analysis and the outcome. I think the traffic in that corridor is already horrible, and that intersection backs up. And Richard's point to the new development going in a little bit to the east and coming on the other side of it, I think it's a problem. And of course, we always say we'll mitigate when we do the development.
Sure.
But we always say that.
But
and they always do it.
This is going from commercial to residential, so it has a lower trip generation.
I heard that earlier.
I mean, you already have the traffic out there. That would occur if you had the commercial.
Right. You're saying that the R30 development there will generate less trips than
yes.
the potential commercial development there, and I'm a little skeptical of that.
Okay.
Yeah. Is there a signal already there for the people
that
water?
At 167.
Signal here?
No, there's no signal there at this point. It's
a
good intersection.
There's a signal right here.
The signal is down on the 162nd Ward Road.
And another one.
There's another one here. There's one here.
There's one there.
No. Back down the road a bit at the intersection.
Yeah, at that intersection, there's a light there.
That was my first project with the county.
Do you have other questions? No other questions?
Housing. So I don't know if you recall last year we were working on innovative housing where we adopted the code for cottage housing and accessory dwelling units. This is part three. We're just updating the manufactured housing code. So basically, we're updating the code to comply with state law, and then I'm going to go through the draft Title 40 changes. I'm not going through all of the draft Title 40 changes, but just the major parts. What we've done as far as public process, and then just have questions and answers. So I printed out the PowerPoint because, obviously, that would be better if you had it in front of you. It's the RCW about what it's, in a nutshell, what it's saying is that we cannot treat manufactured housing any differently than any other type of housing. Any type of regulation you place on manufactured housing, you have to place it on all kinds of housing. And so we need to update our code to reflect that. However, we can regulate as far as mobile homes. So according to HUD, a mobile home is any mobile home that was built before 1976, and then after 1976, you could call it a manufactured home. So what we're doing in the code is, updating it to comply with this new state law. So what's changing, and I'm going to walk you through our binder and point out the major parts of the code update that you should look at. So if you look at, let's see, tab 3. And go to page 7 of 4100.
Page what again?
Page 7. Page 7 of 40-100. And I have it highlighted in yellow, the change that we're making. And basically what we're doing is we're changing the definition of a single family dwelling. We're going to expand the definition of a single family dwelling to include modular manufactured homes.
We're on tab 3, page 7.
4100.
40.100.
Yeah, definitions.
Definitions.
Oh, there we go. It's a 28-page document.
We have the same page numbers in the top right corner. You could maybe assist us with a little bit more.
Yeah, it's top right corner. It's in tab 3, 40-100. It's in the code sections.
Is it like 15/28 or something like that? Or
no, it's 7/28.
7/28.
On.
So it's highlighted in yellow.
Got it.
So we're going to expand the definition of single family dwelling to include manufactured home and modular home.
Why are you smiling?
No, I'm just...
Yeah, I thought maybe there's something hidden in this.
Is there
something I'm not seeing that I should be seeing?
Because I'm going to move on.
Okay.
If there's any questions.
It's not much yellow so far.
Modular manufacturing.
Right, we're just... Yeah, we're...
We're good.
Okay.
So this is where we get the 1976 version of what
that's a
mobile versus manufacturing.
That's a great question, and that leads me to the next change. So we're in that same section, and we're just going to go to page 16.
Yeah, it's weird. When I lived in my 1985 mobile home, it was a mobile home.
Well, HUD has updated the definitions of mobile home and manufactured home. So basically anything after 1976 is a manufactured home. So we're...
If it still has the wheels on it, is it really?
That's a trailer. Well,
that's a recreation vehicle.
Get take wheels on it.
But your assessment
put
just
on blocks.
So. Yeah, great. So page 16, does everybody have that?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. What you're going to see is that we're going to include the definition of manufactured home. Basically, it's constructed after 1976, and that has the HUD, meets the HUD standards, and what we call it is a red tag. And before I go further, apologies, I should introduce Mitch Nichols, who's head of community development, and he can answer any questions about building or any questions that you have about relating to manufactured homes. So we're also including manufactured home park, just updating that, manufactured home space, and then down at the bottom of the page, changes are highlighted in yellow. If it's strikeout, we're deleting it. If it's underlined, we're adding it. Where you have mobile home, we're getting rid of mobile home park, mobile home space. We're adding modular home. So just to reiterate, at the top of the page, in the underline, in the highlighted yellow, is the language we're adding. At the bottom of the page, you'll see highlighted yellow. Mobile home staying there. We're just changing the definition to comply with the HUD standards and the state law. We're deleting mobile home park, mobile home space, and then we're adding a definition of modular home. So the existing mobile home parks, this does not impact them. This relates to anything new.
So moving a mobile home now going forward, if this is approved, does not exist anymore. You cannot put a mobile home in a mobile park because there's no mobile park, correct?
So by that definition, mobile home is something that was constructed prior to 1976.
Right.
I'd ask that question of our building official. He said you could do it, but you have to get the red tag, which means you have to meet the standards, the energy standards, the structural standards.
Which probably don't exist in a pre-1976 mobile home.
You could, but it's...
Unless you upgrade it.
Right, so you'd have to upgrade it, right. And when you do that to a structure that's been given a tag by the state, then it has to meet the state standards for the upgrade.
Right.
So there's a potential that a pre-1976 mobile home could meet the requirements for habitability and energy. And be put in a park.
I wouldn't see that happening.
Yeah, park. You wouldn't. The rule that you saw earlier that modifies RTW 59-20030, which is the Landlord-Tenant Act for mobile home parks, basically allows installation of mobile homes and manufactured homes and RVs in mobile home or manufactured home parks and communities. They still have to meet the building safety requirements for those structures and tie downs and anchoring and access, ingress and egress, all the things that are essential components in habitability and safety for a dwelling are applicable in these structures. The state may have given the seal of approval on the construction of the dock of the structure, but the placement of the structure is still our responsibility and jurisdiction.
So in the scenario of owning a pre-1976 dwelling and desiring or needing to move it to a new location, are we going to permit that if it hasn't been upgraded?
If it still has a wheel assembly and it's roadable, certainly.
But you couldn't move it on a lot.
Right.
But it's in a pre-1976 mobile home park today, and it's owned by a citizen of Clark County,
right.
And now they want to move it to a new location. We're saying they can't.
If it's a lot in an urban area and a subdivision, then no.
Where can they move it?
They can move it to a mobile home park or an existing mobile home park. Or a manufactured home community provided.
So they don't have to upgrade it to move it to another mobile home park, which is now known as a manufactured home facility.
There's a lot of nuances, but essentially there is a possibility they could do it, but it would still have to meet the placement requirements. It would still have to meet the requirements for the
park.
But
it doesn't need to meet an upgrade.
Not that I can tell, unless you're modifying it in some way, shape, or form that requires a permit. Well, they'd have to get the tag. To move it in the first place, they'd have to get the tag. And that would require, if it's not been upgraded, the state doesn't issue those tags without upgrading.
You could move up pre-1976.
That's correct.
That's the current standard. That's my point.
Right, it doesn't change.
I just wondered why mobile home parks
are going.
They're just structurally, they're not configured properly. They're built for the smaller
narrow. Is it the current standard that you have to upgrade it?
Yes.
The current standard. You'd have to upgrade it.
Yes.
In order to move it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Not too many of those around.
Right.
No.
Right. So you'd have to get that red tag, the HUD red tag that I'm talking about, that I've been mentioning. You have to get that right now. And you'd have to meet the standards for energy standards, structural standards, if you want to move that now. If you want to move a mobile home park now, You would have to have that permit.
And the only way you're going to get our placement permit for moving that to relocate it in our jurisdiction is with that, red tag.
So we have a certain number of these facilities throughout the county that have
older
aged dwellings in them. And I'm thinking as we continue to redevelop these areas, those manufactured home facilities are going to get a lot of pressure to clear them out and to start over at some point. And people who own those pre-1976 single wides, they're not going to be able to afford them.
They're out of luck.
So, well,
their investment.
I've
done that before.
Yeah, there's actually a program in place at the State Department of Community, Trade, and Economic Development actually has an assistance program available for mobile home park residents that are displaced and can't take their trailers with them because they're either too decayed to move and they're unsafe, or there's not another park for them to go to. Jurisdictions routinely connect with them when they're having to rent a mobile home park that's no longer managed properly and it's fallen into such disrepair that nothing's safe in it. The connections, the sewers leaking top of the ground, yeah. Water systems are failing and so forth. So the condemnation process mandates that we connect with CTED to ensure that those folks and the residents in there have at least some protection and assistance, economic assistance to help them.
That's an important piece of information. I'd like to make sure that we get that into the record when we do our hearing about it.
Okay.
Okay.
We can get you a couple of printouts from that program. Yeah. The application is actually really illuminating.
Yeah, that's not a problem. We can include that in the record.
Okay.
And in my experience, that relocation money doesn't usually compensate people that have spent a lot of money that may have a nice mobile home but just doesn't meet current standards.
Right.
I'm not talking about one of these that's all falling apart, but I've had clients that have, for economic reasons, decided they wanted to build a subdivision, and so they got rid of the mobile home part, which they can do. They got to give notice, you know, a year in advance and go through all the hoops. But, you know, then you get people coming in and saying, I spent, you know, $100,000 on my mobile home. It's really nice. They show pictures, but doesn't meet standards, can't be moved. And so it goes off to the construction, you know, wherever you take construction debris.
So I would think of like a mobile home before 1976, they've not spent $100,000 on it.
This was an old, it wasn't, you know, it was a 1990s mobile home, but it still didn't meet the standards to be moved without major upgrades.
So under this code update, they can move it to a lot as long as they could get the red tag. As long as they can get the permit.
Yeah, and I don't know how, I don't think those are that easy to get for.
Yeah.
In 1990, it may have come with
it.
Maybe. Not 76, so.
Yeah.
Then there's also the moving cost. From, $20,000 probably just to move one of those things.
Right.
If it was built in 1990, it's going to be bigger than the tiny ones from the 70s.
So I'm just going to move along to I'm going to highlight a couple of other code sections. There's a code section that is 426130, and it's in tab 3, and that's about mobile homes on individual lots. When you get to that, you're going to see everything is in strikeout because we're going to repeal that section of code. And we're repealing that section of code because, as I mentioned in the state law,
what page number is it up on the upper right hand corner?
It's 4260.
1728 or?
It's one of two. It's just two pages.
Oh, one of two. It's on the next.
It's a separate code section. It's
one of two.
Yeah. 4260130.
Like that. Well, it's after the 909, it's one of two. They're going to repeal that.
At any rate, you're going to see in tab 3, there's 4260130. We're going to repeal that code section because it relates to placing mobile homes on individual lots, and as I indicated in the state law, you cannot treat a manufactured home any differently than any other type of home. So that's just gonna, we're just gonna repeal that code section. And then finally, we're gonna update the mobile home or manufactured home park section. Just gonna change it from mobile home to.
Sorry, I was gonna ask you on that part that we're totally taking out.
Yes.
Does it still allow somebody, if they have 5 acres, that can go stick a mobile home on and move it up there if they get the permit?
Well, as I mentioned, we're changing the definition of a single family dwelling, and that's gonna include a manufactured home or a modular home.
So if they have a 1977 and it meets the criteria to be moved.
And they have the.
They've got some land, they can move it out there and put it on their land.
Yes.
And you can put an accessory dwelling.
You can put a tiny house next to it too. We can do a tiny house.
As long as it's attached by a single wall.
We do 5 tiny houses next to it actually. That's what I'm gonna do with a mobile home with 5 tiny houses for my kids.
This code change isn't related to
yours. Get some yours.
It's not related to
that. Yours are bigger.
So finally, 426130 manufactured home park. We're changing the language. It's going to go from mobile home to manufactured home park because, as I mentioned, we're updating the definitions. I'm also adding language to allow a recreational vehicle, a park model, or any similar type use, provided that they can get a tag from the Washington Labor and Industries so that they meet energy standards and structural standards. If they can get the permit, they can place it in a mobile home park. And then.
And that's a red tag, not a blue tag?
I don't know what color that tag
is. Red and gold, yeah. So the red tag, yes.
No, they have blue. I mean, that's like right. A lot of the park models have blue tags, and right. As I understand it, goes on
those
the fire standard or something.
Right. That's correct.
And so if they have a blue tag, that's not good enough to move it. They need a red tag or blue tags.
If it's a park model, it can be
with a blue
if
tag.
It's a designated park model, that's correct. That's what our ordinance states.
And then finally, the other major change is we're going to allow modular homes for temporary health hardship. We're going to allow manufactured home or modular home for temporary health hardship.
Yes. Are they now only allowed for permanent health hardships? Because aren't they allowed now already?
There's no such thing as a permanent health hardship. There's only a temporary health hardship.
So a
right now, it's a mobile home, right? And you gotta remove it when you're done.
Right. So right now it says temporary health hardship mobile home. We're just gonna update it to be temporary health hardship manufactured home or modular home.
Now, CC&Rs would trump this?
That's a good question. For a subdivision, yes. If you have a CC&R, you could not allow.
You could exclude them then.
Right, but any new plats that we have, we're not going to have a note on the plat that says no manufactured homes allowed. We cannot do that.
So you're, in the future, CC&Rs cannot discriminate?
The CC&Rs can still say...
No, in the future. The future, CC&Rs.
So there's two different things.
Okay.
You have a plat that the county issues. It cannot have a note on it that says no manufactured homes. You can have CC&Rs that say... no manufactured homes allowed. They're two different things.
So a future development then would have to, if they push come to shove, would have to allow a manufactured home in?
Yes. So
is that what you're saying?
That's what she said.
They're allowed by right. They're the same as stick-built homes. Period.
CC&Rs are agreements that are private, and they are not they're not the same as a flat or a code. So, different things.
I realize that, Chris. I'm just saying, if a new plat was being developed 3 years from now, they could not develop that plat as they saw their visions of how to develop it. They would also have to accept
manufactured homes in there. No. Know what we're saying?
No.
No. Okay. She's saying that they can't write it on the plat.
The county,
no manufactured homes.
Gotcha.
They could still do private
subsidies
that are recorded separately.
All right. Okay, thanks, Steve.
Okay, if the county issues a plat 3 years from now, it can't have a note that says no manufactured homes allowed. The agreement within the subdivision, it could say no manufactured homes allowed, unless the state legislature changes that. But right now it hasn't, so we won't worry about it.
Good, understand.
Okay. All right, so those are the major changes that you're going to see in tab 3. Those sections that I pointed out, and I printed out a copy of the PowerPoint for you, so you have that. This is the public process. I took the proposed code changes to the Development Engineering Advisory Board for their review, and they recommended approval of the changes to the manufactured code per the way staff recommended. So, that's all I have. Are there any more questions?
What's the difference between a manufactured home and a modular?
Modular is how it's put together.
Multiple pieces.
Multiple pieces.
Right. Manufactured, it's just one piece.
Yeah. Or so modular is multiple pieces, manufacturer's one structure.
Comes on a single axle, right?
Okay. So it's a manufactured modular home. Mm-hmm. Technically. Okay.
As far as you know what's in your binder, I just included all of the information from the public process. We had an open house, as I mentioned, even the deed. We have a web page. I have all the PowerPoint presentations, maps, all of it.
There's one thing I would like to add, and that's about housing affordability. Modular and manufactured home is quite a bit more affordable for a lot of folks, and this is a good housing alternative for Clark County for a lot of our residents who are on limited income haven't got the ability to compete in the housing market for the stick-built stuff that we're putting down so much of. So it's a good affordable housing alternative, and we're pretty confident that the state has done a good job in licensing and certifying these units, so when they bring them into our community, we can be pretty well assured that the residents are going to be properly protected from the elements and have a safe living environment.
So how will the assessor look at it? Are they going to be depreciating assets, or are they going to be appreciating assets?
If it's affixed to the property, I'm going to assume that it would be an appreciating asset as long as it's maintained in good condition, just like any other structure. You know, site-built structures can depreciate just as well as a manufactured structure. Just depends on how well the property owner wants to maintain them.
Yeah. That's what I thought until the insurance company pulled the line out for $19,000. And it was on a foundation.
Well, how old was it?
It was in 1985, and it got totaled in.
How did it get totaled?
Had a tree fall on it. 2003.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It cost more than $20,000 to fix it.
They would have fixed it. They would have put $56,000 into fixing it. That they were only going to give me $19,000 as far as if I wanted to go to the stick built house and tear it down.
Okay.
Miles?
Yeah. But $56,000 to fix it.
Is it double what?
It's double what? 1985.
I can do a lot for $56,000. I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Building the entire addition of the house. Two-story addition.
Not much these days.
That construction costs are pretty high.
Oh, if you do it yourself, yeah.
Build my parts.
You do a lot.
I was saying, the other problem is getting anybody to come out, and I can't even find somebody to come out and do my stairs, you know, because they're certainly so busy.
Well, I'll give you my card.
Yeah.
I'll come out and I'll take care of that for you.
All right.
You should have seen
in my wallet.
You licensed in Click Tech County?
I'm more nice in the state of Washington.
It's getting hard, man.
My place is a good tech camp.
Oh, so that's part of the problem.
If you need something done, let me know. Yeah, we'll be able to do it. We got a set of stairs.
Deck stairs.
Deck stairs?
No.
Which one are we in?
We're on tab number 4. The arterial atlas amendment.
What's next?
Yeah, what's next? What are we doing next? We're having lots of fun tonight.
Arterial atlas amendment.
Connecting 87.
We only got 10 more minutes.
All right, the best for last.
Yeah. These guys are always fast, though. They get right to the point. Actually, everybody gets right to the point. Here's the facts. Figure it out.
All right, so for the record, Gary Albright, Clark County Community Planning. So this is a CPZ 2018-0007, Northeast 99th Street Extension. It's a comprehensive plan arterial atlas amendment. So we are looking at amending a segment of the arterial atlas that runs through Northeast 99th Street, connecting Northeast 87th Avenue to Northeast 72nd Avenue. So that's the area right there. So just, there's a proposed road that goes through this area that, you can just cut to the chase, it's fine. So, where's the maximum line? All right, so here we go. This. We got two drivers, apparently.
Don't touch.
All right, so the current arterial atlas has this, goes up here, the yellow line, through an existing dedicated right-of-way, connects to Northeast 101st Street out to Northeast 72nd Avenue. So there's a property owner that lives right here. We realized that this road was there. And the current road there is, it's not the 20-year capital facility plan. It's not the 6-year transportation improvement plan. So there's no funding to build this proposed road. But she didn't want it in this neighborhood. So we heard from Washington Utility Transportation Commission that they discouraged a crossing of the railroad, an at-grade railroad crossing. So there's a curve in the road, in the railroad. So if you look at this map, I wish I could. So the railroad curve comes down and curves right here and then curves again. So because of what we heard from the Washington Utility Transportation Commission, we hired HDR to do a feasibility study for us, which is this map here. So they came up with three alternatives. So the alignment of going up, an overcrossing, an undercrossing, and then going, instead of having an over and undercrossing, we skip the over undercrossing, the railroad, bypass the railroad, and this trucking business come down, connect to Northeast 72nd Avenue, and then the other option is go straight across Northeast 99th Street. So just some background about this area. So this is Curtin Creek. In 2012, Public Works did some improvements in this area. So they've made permitting this road right here easier when it comes time for construction. So what I've heard is if a road is gonna get built down here, so this is a whole drainage basin, and it's at its max for credits, for, because you need to drain, your drainage needs to occur, your mitigation needs to occur in your drainage basin. So this drainage basin is basically full, so they'll need to have to find some other way to fill up the mitigation requirements for building the road this way across. And so that's the segment right here So this would be okay to do. And then coming through here, so the overpass, talking about that, it would need to be 23 feet high at an 8% grade, which the road would start right about here. From northeast 83rd Avenue.
Are you talking the red, the red alignment or the?
The yellow alignment.
Oh, the right. Lemon yellow, okay.
We can't really see your, where you say right here, we can't really see it.
Notice that.
Can't see your cursor.
Yeah.
Right here. So the intersection right there, that's where that 8% grade would start.
What percent again?
8%.
That's pretty steep.
Yes, it is. Steep to 23 feet high for the railroad crossing, for an overcrossing. And then we looked at an undercrossing, and it would have to be 17 feet deep to go under it. So the cost for those are really expensive, right around $20 million.
How much would it cost to modify the railroad?
What do you mean modify the railroad?
Where would you put it?
It goes over under the road.
Deep the road all down.
Yeah.
They probably have a more slope restriction
on the road
than
the
street road.
They're just getting wild.
Yeah.
Ridgefield tried to do that for years. You
why 17 feet deep?
But it's our railroad, isn't it?
Because of the height of the train?
No, deep. Deep.
So, what's the blue line? What's the blue line is a connection straight across. It's just, you know, from an engineering point of view, why not go from one end to the other end?
Okay. So, what's the recommended alternative?
So, the recommended alternative is the yellow line.
Okay.
Is it the yellow has the least amount of impacts?
Where's the railroad cross?
Oh, and not go across.
Not
the railroad.
Go across not
the
railroad. Railroad.
So, to go across the railroad, It would cost $21 million. To go under it would cost about $19 million. So alternative F is that's
the time you get to that
yellow line is $15 million, and alternative F is $15 million. Alternative J, well, I take that back. Alternative J is well, that's right. It's $15 million. Alternative is $15 million.
What color is alternative, which letter?
Alternative J is the blue. So that one, alternative J is, yes, alternative J is the blue. So that one's $14 million. It would cost less, but it would take out 9 homes on that line. So 9 homes would have to go away to build alternative J.
Okay.
So an alternative F would, it would have would one displacement would occur, and the same would occur up top for the over and under. One displacement would occur.
And those 9 homes, is that cost of paying the property owners for those included in the $14 million?
It would. So the estimate given from the consultant is based on a 10% design analysis. So that's only 10%. So cost would change once they got.
Right, but does it include the cost of condemning 10 homes, 9 homes?
The assumptions were included in that, yes.
And you said that was a problem across the creek, but why is the yellow one okay and the blue one? I mean, it looks like the blue one's going to have less impact on the creek than the yellow one because it's a shorter distance across. Why would the yellow one?
Well, it is, but the mitigation down here, it would cost more for mitigation.
Why?
Because the whole drainage basin is maxed out.
Right, but you'd have to mitigate for the yellow road.
But the yellow they've already done pre-work on this in 2012. Public Works has done this.
Oh, they were planning for this.
Yes.
Let's mitigate, or they already did the work, so they wouldn't have.
They did the mitigation, or they actually put the road bed in?
No, they put the mitigation in. They're ready. The road bed isn't there. I've been out there.
But why couldn't the mitigation be used for the road wherever you located in that general area? I mean, we're talking about a pretty small realignment of the road. Why wouldn't that mitigation just apply to the road in the new alignment?
It could, but what I've been told from Public Works is that it would cost more down here because more is required. So less mitigation is required because they've already done work up there.
I thought you said they just did mitigation work.
Physical work.
They've done some physical work up there.
On the roadbed.
The basic deal is that the upper part of the alignment
it does not cross Kirk's Creek.
It's been a long-standing alignment through that subdivision. I mean, that's probably 25, 30 years old, starting from the peak and going down to the right. So that portion of alignment was well known and established. So when the Curtain Creek project was done, they knew to mitigate to allow that.
Right, but if they've mitigated already and we haven't actually built anything, we're entitled to build something because we've done the mitigation to support a future construction project. My question is, why can't we just realign the construction project and still count the mitigation for it? Because if we move to the blue, then we will not be putting in a road bed across the creek where the yellow is. So wouldn't we be able to apply that mitigation to our new location?
Steve, you probably want to talk to somebody from Clean Water who has some technical knowledge on how mitigation is measured.
I was talking with Kevin Tyler about this, and he was just overall saying it would, that more mitigation is required for the blue line across.
Different areas, different impacts.
I want to ask just a clarifying question.
Sure.
The blue line going across, which requires more mitigation, to go straight between two points costs, we're estimated $14 million?
Yes, it's a lower cost.
The yellow line that's already been mitigated, it goes up and around and back down and through, what does that cost to build?
$15 million, it's an estimate.
Estimate, so yes. The yellow line is $15 million, the blue line is $14 million.
Correct.
Does that contemplate spending more money on the mitigation?
Well, no, so it did not.
So it didn't contemplate spending more money on the mitigation?
No, because I am not sure if it did. I can't remember if it did exactly speak to that specific piece of it.
Yeah. One thing you have to remember, this is an arterial alignment, and so it's not designed to have houses access directly onto it. So if you use the blue alignment,
okay,
you're going to have a whole string of houses there that are going to have direct access onto a minor arterial.
Yeah, but you don't want that.
You want to limit access. So 99th Street's another east-west corridor that's very important. And this is a link to keep it open. It feeds to the freeway, feeds all the way practically to China Ditch. So
that makes sense. So if you take the blue line, you're going to have houses accessing it. We don't want that. A nice clean.
Maybe not, because they're going to take nine of those houses out, so there may not be that many that
happen. And plus the intersection up here, they'll have a problem with the intersection up here because the railroad crossing is right there.
Well, you can't see where you're pointing.
I'm sorry. Yeah,
there's a railroad crossing there.
The railroad crossing is right there.
Okay, and where the yellow line is, there is no railroad.
Right.
Oh, so we're totally eliminating the railroad issues.
Yes.
And we've already kind of did some mitigation for part of it.
Don't have to remove nine houses.
So I went to Deep this afternoon, and they had some concerns with the yellow line about these two parcels and these two parcels up here.
Shake
here,
a minute. Okay.
And down here. So they're concerned about the usability of these two parcels, which I don't see their concern, but they wanted me to share that with you guys.
What were the concerns?
You said it's hacking. Yeah.
Well,
specific.
Accessibility.
Accessibility?
Because access doesn't come in off an arterial from Northeast 72nd Avenue. It would have to come in off of 99th Street.
Or it's right in, right out.
Yeah.
So what's driving the major decision?
These are ugly.
He's
missing a
lot of information.
What's missing? I can provide.
Well, I'm thinking about what is the issue around mitigation
in the corridors.
And then, honestly, I don't believe the estimates whatsoever.
So at least
I think they're pie in the sky. To see some documentation.
It's in the staff report. It's in the memo. It's attached. So it's all in here. So the whole consultant study is in the packet.
Thank you.
Okay. The cost estimates are back here. It's all very detailed.
Okay. And it's just come to a search, but I'm just so curious why
they're driving.
What physical dollars have been spent on the mitigation work, the physical work?
I'm not sure. As far as the Curtain Creek crossing over here?
Yeah, the one you said it had been physically worked on.
I don't know.
Okay. That's where you're going to be lost. Okay. Can't touch it.
Nice work. A lot of work went into that. Wow. A lot of work went into that to get that out. So.
Okay. If I may, the bottom line is that the county still needs an east-west access for this area. I think Padding Expressway is further to the south, and then we just constructed or finished construction of Alameda 19. There's no other east-west access if you don't plan for this area as it develops. And when the county asked to look at this, the issue really is, do we still need this east-west crossing, and what are the potential alternatives to do that? There's some folks that live, go back to the original map, that map, yes. Go where the dedication, show where the dedication has already occurred.
Right through the yellow line?
Yeah.
This way?
That's dedicated.
Yeah.
You know, so we're trying to see, okay, what are the options? Do we continue with that? Do you just go across? And what are the implications of doing that, given that you have the railroad there too, and the concern that has been expressed? This, by hiring a consultant, this is the best that we can do. And I recommend that the yellow be the most feasible. And that's what we are going to be presenting to you. Whatever question that you have, let us know. We'll listen to that, come back and subscribe for your hearing.
Is there something driving the time element that it has to have a decision?
It was put on our calendar to do with you, and
is there money? Is there funding all set up for it?
There's no funding for this road alignment.
No. There's no funding.
No funding.
No.
We're just doing this, putting a line on a map.
It's secure for the country.
You can't.
Funding without it being on
a
CFP.
I should know what it is.
Yeah, so Public Works is currently designing a segment of 99th Street from 94th East, you know where the liquid landfill is. They're making a connection there, so it's in design. And depending on when funding occurs, construction could begin either 2021 or 2022. So this is an important segment for Public Works to have the east-west connection for the whole transportation system. What I quickly wanted to show you. So we've looked at the 2035 RTC traffic model. So having this improvement made here relieves congestion up here on Northeast 119th Street at the top and Northeast 88th Street. So the red it shows a volume change, and it went basically it increases, which was normal because of the improvement made. So that's why you see that. But there's a decrease up here and a decrease down here, which for the transportation system, that was the goal.
So we're widening 119th right now.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And during the open house, people that lived up here liked the line down here, the blue line, and the people on the yellow liked the ones up here.
Yeah. Shocking.
I wonder why that's
one. Oh. All right, with that, let's get started and move to the next room.
You've got another career.
Yeah. I'm too embarrassed in the shower.